Hi, everybody. Yay. If you've got a Bible, please turn to Luke chapter 4. Luke chapter 4. And we've got a couple of Bibles being handed around. Thank you to our amazing welcome team. Let's give it up for our welcome team as well, who welcome you so fondly and with great care every evening that you come here. Thanks so much. We're talking about how to deal with brokenness. A couple of weeks ago, Chris was speaking to us about how we deal with brokenness within ourselves. Last week, Simon did a great job of talking about what compassion means, how it means to be a minister, loving other people, dealing with their brokenness. And other people's brokenness means that we have to learn how to use that annoying thing called forgiveness, right? That thing that God did towards us, we have to then do towards other people because we expect it from them, and so we have to give it back. That's how the Lord set things up. So we forgive others and we seek to be a blessing to others in the midst of their brokenness. Well, tonight, I want to talk a little bit about the brokenness within the world around us. And by that, I mean the systems, the organizations, and the institutions that we encounter as we live our lives here on planet Earth. Because the reality is this, that just as you and I carry brokenness, so does everyone in the world around us. And when we set up systems and organizations and institutions, which is what we naturally do as human beings, our brokenness pervades itself into the systems, organizations, and institutions that we set up. So guess what? All the things that we set up to be really positive have negative impacts as well. Unintended consequences that we never expected but happen simply because humanity is broken. So for example, we recognize the climate crisis that we ourselves are managing to destroy our planet. So people are protesting around the world and saying, come on, it's time to wake up and make a difference. We hear statistics like this map which I found this morning. The top 1% of all of the country, that's the wealthiest 47 million people who live around the world, live in primarily Western countries apart there from China. There's another statistic which is slightly harrowing, that the bottom half of the population of planet Earth, that's 3.5 billion people, nearly 4 billion people, the bottom half of the population own the same amount of money as 42 other people. The 42 richest people in the world have the same amount of money as 3.5 billion other people. And when we hear stats like that, we know we're destroying our planet. We know that there's massive inequality all around us. What in the world do we do? I don't know about you, but it's easy, I find, to become a bit dazed and confused by it and think, well, I just can't really deal with that. So the best thing I can do is get my head down, try and live a good life, try and earn a living so that I can pay my bills. And by the end of life, I get to go to heaven and be with Jesus and say, well, we made it through. It's tempting, but it's a very, very long way away from the vision that Jesus has for you and that Jesus has for me. So looking then in Luke chapter 4, we read Jesus's manifesto, the things that he said about himself that was first written by the prophet Isaiah, who looked and saw what it was that God was going to do. And Jesus said, it's happening right now in me. And this is what he said. We're starting in verse 18 and just reading that and verse 19. The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. He's anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor, freedom for the prisoners, recovery of sight for the blind, setting the oppressed free, proclaiming favor from God. Jesus said, it's me. It begins right now. And if we are followers of Jesus, if we are apprentices of Jesus, seeking to learn from him and model our life after him, which is what it means to be a Christian, then it means that that is our manifesto as well. That that's what Jesus did, and so that's what his followers do too. It's a vision that's way bigger than just making it through our life. It touches everything that we do. It challenges us to live this life that might demonstrate the goodness of God, the favor of God to other people around us. And in particular, those who are struggling, the broken, the poor, the imprisoned, the oppressed. Psalm 140 verse 12 says this, the Lord secures justice for the poor and upholds the cause of the needy. He secures justice. He cares about justice. He cares about the needy. And perhaps the best way of summarizing this is written by the prophet Micah, who in chapter 6 of his prophecies, verse 8 says, he has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? This passage is set in the context of worship. We've had a great time of worship tonight. And yet the prophet Micah comes along and says, all your songs are great. All the offerings that you give are fantastic. But what is God really looking after? To act justly, to love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. And then one final verse before we think about what it might mean for us. Jesus said that the greatest commandments were summed up in these two quotes from the Old Testament. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is this, is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. You see, we want to be a church that loves the Lord with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. And a church that loves our neighbor as ourselves. We want to be a church that understands what gospel witness is, telling people about the goodness and love of God, that Jesus died for them, that Jesus paid the price so they can be free and forgiven. But we also want to be a church that does gospel ministry. Sharing with the most broken, the least, the last, and the lost. Sharing the love of Jesus and showing the love of Jesus. Why would we choose to pattern our lives like that? Well, because that's exactly what Jesus did himself. Shared the love of God and showed the love of God. Here's a photo of us in Hong Kong just a few weeks ago where it was warm and sunny. Oh, Lord. We had a great trip seeing the work of Jackie Pullinger, who was called out to Hong Kong over 50 years ago and started working with the least, the last, and the lost, and she's still there. And this is a church that we went to visit. On the right-hand side, there's a tent. And the tent is where they meet for worship. So out of the work that Jackie's done with people who are stuck, particularly in gangs and in drug addiction, they've planted a whole number of churches. And this is a new church plant that was planted in about September. And because of the work that they've done in the local area and because of the group that went to plant with it, there's about 100 people who were worshiping Jesus there when we went to see them. So on the right is where they meet to worship. On the left, you'll see a house. Now, Joni, am I right? A house is a pretty rare thing in Hong Kong, right? Mostly you find these massive high-rise apartments, but there is a house. And on the left-hand side, by that white little wall, is another house. Two houses on this one compound. And there are people who live in those houses. And on a Sunday morning, we went to have a look around the church. Their front room turns into the kids group space. On the other house, it turns into the youth group space. And the rest of the week, people live there, sharing their lives with people who have recently come off drugs, who have been referred to them by the police because they need some form of help in their lives. And they lay their lives down for these people, that they might share the love of Jesus and show the love of Jesus. It was deeply inspiring and deeply challenging for us, looking at the way that they were willing to be inconvenienced, a little bit like Simon was talking about last week, for the sake of others. And Tim Keller, who planted a church in New York City and is an amazing preacher and teacher, suggests that there are three key ways for us to act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly. Three ways for us, the church, to engage in social justice. And the first one is this: relief. It's simply helping. Offering to buy a sandwich for the homeless person that you walk past in the street. Or maybe it's donating food to the food bank, or maybe it's serving at a local food bank, trying to help those who've run out of money and can't buy any food. Maybe it looks like the work that Lizzie is doing with our church school just over the road. She goes once a week and is an advocate for many people who are struggling and don't know where else to turn. Or maybe it's the pamper afternoon work that we do on a Monday afternoon, Lizzie and her team of people who love on those involved in the sex industry, who for the rest of the week are used and abused, are stuck in drug addiction and stuck in a horrendous lifestyle. But for an hour and a half on a Monday afternoon, get loved on, get cared for, get their nails done and their hair done, and get treated as daughters of the King. Relief is a beautiful thing to offer. And it's important, but relief agencies have learned through the years that there's a problem with relief itself. Relief can create dependency. And so whilst it's really great to go around and feed the homeless, the council's saying it creates a honeypot effect. It's really unhelpful. Homeless people are much more likely to come into the city centre because they know they'll get free food, and they're less likely to deal with the underlying issues because we're trying to be a blessing to them and do the nice thing. But actually, what would be really helpful is to ask them about their key worker, ask them if they've been to a hostel, ask them if they have a bed, ask them what you might be able to do to help. Jackie Pullinger said this: feeding the homeless is kind, but it's not the gospel. So what do we do beyond relief? We don't want to be those who just do relief and end up getting criticized for it. Don't know if you saw in the news about Stacey Dooley a few months ago. She went on behalf of Comic Relief to Uganda and took a photo with a child from Uganda saying how much she loved meeting him. And she got absolutely slated. And the term white savior became prominent in the news. That us wealthy countries would go along and save the poorer countries. Now, I don't think that was her heart at all. And I think she got roasted for something that actually she was trying to be really kind and helpful. But it just goes to show that kindness doesn't always go the full way. So the second thing then that Tim Keller talks about is development, which is to do with bringing a person or a community to self-sufficiency. And I'd say that this word, this development, is behind our vision to redevelop the crypt downstairs. So downstairs, we've got 600 square meters of space that's being used currently by 7 dead people. It's not a great use of space, in my mind. What we would love to do is to redevelop downstairs so that we've got some more space for our youth and our kids, because we've run out of space upstairs. On Sunday morning, we're full. We don't really know what else to do right now. We want some space where these vulnerable people that we're working with can come and maybe have a shower. And instead of doing relief stuff where we create dependency, maybe we can walk with them a little bit and serve them and help them walk out of their vulnerability or poverty, whatever it that is for them. And then some of the space to create some co-working space where people can come and rent a bit of space to work, and we can see some micro-industries developed where people develop businesses and we can offer employment opportunities to those who live around here or are long-term unemployed, and bit by bit we can offer them employable skills so they can either stay with us and work or move on somewhere else and work. We want to do development work to create self-sufficiency, so that people can have pride in what it is that they are doing. And that vision came from learning about the work of Tear Fund. A few years ago, I myself went to Uganda and probably could have been criticized for white savior, but for the fact that Tear Fund know the dependency that relief can cause. And so they've worked really, really hard over the past couple of decades to try and help develop projects that will create self-sufficiency, not cause people to be dependent upon aid. And I went to Uganda and I saw all these different projects, which were extraordinary. And a couple of years ago, Lizzie's dad is a retired doctor, and they've been going out to Tanzania for about 2 months every year for the last decade or so. He's been working in the local hospital trying to help young children, particularly children who are struggling, newborn babies, and particularly children born with AIDS. And as he's done that work, he's wanted to share that with us. And so he invited us and, thank God, paid for us to go and visit him. And so we went to Tanzania and to this little village in the middle of nowhere called Barega, where this hospital exists that serves a vast area. And we were inspired and excited. And we heard a little of the stories of aid that had been given to them, planting lots of crops that would produce fuel by biodiesel, that it turned out the technology was wrong and it didn't work after all. And so now their best fields are taken up with these jojoba crop, which is sucking up all the moisture and drying up the river and consuming the water across the land for nothing. That's what aid did. That's what relief did. And we thought, wouldn't it be amazing to see the Tear Fund project that I've seen in Uganda help develop self-sufficiency? So they're not dependent on aid agencies coming in and planting stuff, but they themselves can do that. And so we came back and we said, wouldn't it be great if we could partner with Tear Fund to help this village and area of Barega? And so we've been partnering, and a year ago, we launched our partnership with Tear Fund. And this morning, Darren, who's our Tear Fund ambassador, shared a little bit, and I'm going to try and remember all the different things that he said as I explain them to you. Because of your giving, we tithe our gifts, so that 10% of what you give, just as perhaps you give 10%, we give 10% away to mission around the world. And so we've partnered with the Diocese of Morogoro. Now, Morogoro is this amazing place in the middle of Tanzania. It's about a 10-hour drive from Dar es Salaam, which is on the coast. So you drive inland, drive all the way to this place called Morogoro. And I'm just trying to find the right thing to show you the map. There is the map. So there's Africa, there's Tanzania, just south of the equator. And Morogoro is in this area right in the middle. And so Barega is sort of in the top right corner of that green patch, roughly. It's literally in the middle of nowhere. The roads are tough. When you get there, it's great driving along the motorway, and then you turn up and go to Borrega and you think, oh, okay, that's the end of actual roads then. And people live in Borrega. Some of them live in houses, but many of them live in mud huts still. That's how life is. There's a local market in Borrega where people buy the different products that they need. It's an amazing place to live, but there's massive challenges there too. And one of the projects that has begun, so here's a wonderful picture of the guys meeting, and they've started to train these people in this thing called CCMP, which stands for Church and Community Mobilization Project. It's an incredible way where the church becomes the center of the community, helping people think about how they might use what they have been given to develop the economy around them, to develop an income so they're not dependent on others, but able to be self-sufficient. I just happened to notice this morning, the guy on the bottom right on his phone in a meeting. I was thinking, isn't that amazing? It happens in Tanzania as well. Anyway, that's an aside. These guys are meeting and learning about CCMP, and one of the keys that they've started already in Borrega, in this Morogoro district, is to do little funding communities. So it's a group of people, it's a lot like a credit union. A group of people, a small group of people, save a bit of money each week. Not very much money at all. But somebody comes from that group and says, I'd like to borrow some money to buy something, say a plow or a cow or a goat or whatever it might be. And because they've invested into this union, they're given some money. And then the cow or the goat or the plow, whatever it might be, helps them to make money so that they can pay it back. And as they're paying it back, everyone keeps paying in. So there's a bit more money. And so somebody else is able to buy another goat or another cow or another field or another crop. And I've seen the transformation, these little credit unions that seem absolutely nothing can have. They transform communities. And it's one of the key things that they've started to do in the area of Morogoro. And so they've asked us to pray. Please pray for Gideoni. Now, he's the guy who runs the CCMP project in Morogoro district. He's our guy on the ground, if you like. So it's not white savior. We're just funding Gideoni so that he can help the area of Tanzania that we're longing to support and see flourish. So pray for Gideoni as he settles into his new role. Pray for wisdom in his daily tasks and as he leads and trains others, and for good relationships to be established with the new facilitators. So he's going to be leading a team of people who will go all around this Morogoro district. Pray for those who took part in the envisioning sessions. So they've already shared the vision with a whole bunch of people, and it's great to get the vision, but then it's working it out in practice, right? So pray for renewal and for people to see new possibilities beyond what they have previously known that they can apply in their different areas of work. So that's what the guys on the ground in Tanzania are asking us to pray. And with four other churches, we are supporting this work in this part of Tanzania. It's our way of trying to say we want to take responsibility for development, not just doing relief. And I love it. I'm so excited. And there's an opportunity, if you want to go to Tanzania next year. In October, there's a 10-day trip with Tear Fund and the other churches that we're partnered with to go to Borrega to see some of what it is that they're doing, to meet with the bishop and hear some other people explain what it is that we're trying to do, or that Tear Fund are trying to do and we're supporting. So if you want to go, then come and talk to me. It's from the 1st to the 10th of October. Darren can't go. I'm not sure Lizzie and I should go because we've been already. I think it should be something that the church goes to. Maybe one day we'll do a whole church trip. What do you think? It's fun. It's a really great place to go. We'll charter a plane. How about that? Maybe. If you want to go to Tanzania, come and talk to me. I'd love to tell you some more details. It costs about £1,500 to cover all the different fees and things and flights. So let me know if you would like to know more about that. All right, keep going, Gareth. So we've got relief. We've got development. Those things are important. Let's not pretend that relief isn't important. It is, but it has its place. Development is important, but it's not going to solve the systemic problems. And Keller argues then that the third response, or the third thing that the church can try to do to respond to being acting justly, to loving mercy, and to walking humbly, is reform. Social reform is more about the social conditions and structures that create the conditions for poverty. So it's addressing the brokenness in our world at the structural, legal, and political levels. Leviticus 19 verse 15 teaches us that God wants justice, not partiality towards the poor or towards the rich, but justice. How do you and I engage with that? I read the book called Love Mercy by a guy called Brian somebody or other, and I can't remember his last name. Brian Stevenson. It's an amazing book. This guy, he's black. He was from the north part of the USA and ended up doing law at university and serving and helping out in a law practice in the deep south, where there were still lots of things happening, where there had been racism. And he started to fight on behalf of those who'd been affected by it. It is the most moving and powerful book I think I've read in the last 5 years. I'd really encourage you to read it. It's called Just Mercy by Brian Stevenson. And I got to the end of it and I thought, I want to be a lawyer. What in the world am I doing? Why am I a vicar, God? Why did you let me do this? What kind of idiot were you guiding me into this? Look what a difference this guy is making in other people's lives. And I felt like the Lord say, I didn't call you to be a lawyer, Gareth. I called you to be a vicar. I was like, all right, that's good. I didn't call you to be a vicar. That would be bad. I did call you to be a vicar, but not a lawyer. So seeing as I'm not a lawyer, what can I do? Well, Keller argues that actually the local church is unlikely to be able to bring much effect on this huge cultural systemic level. But what we can do as individuals is support those who are trying to bring change in those kinds of levels. For example, Tear Fund, that we've already mentioned, we partner with them in Tanzania. Tear Fund have an international campaign right now to challenge Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, and Nestle on their use of plastics because of all the waste that's being created around the world. Now, I can't go and talk to Coca-Cola, but they can. And I can sign my name to the petition to empower them to say, look at all these people who think that you should change your practice. Now, if you don't sign that, then they can't say that you're supporting it. If you do sign that petition, you can go online, tearfund.org, and sign their petition. Then they can say, look at all these people who think you should change your practice. And though you may feel very, very small and unable to have any kind of impact, actually you can. Because you're supporting others who are doing something about it. There's also this amazing charity called IJM, International Justice Mission. One of my friends is a barrister, and he took his barristering skills to India, where many, many women get trafficked and enslaved. And he worked for months at a time, just on one case, to pull all of the paperwork together, all of the legal different steps that you need to take so that one woman could be set free. Using skills that I don't have in places that I can't go, but I can support IJM. And so on the tables around here, you'll find two different flyers. And I'd love for those of you who are near the tables to grab them and pass them around. One is a Tear Fund one that says Connected Church. And that's the name of the project that we're involved in. And you can sign up to support this. We already give as a church, but you might want to give personally to that as well. And there's also a flyer for IJM. which again, you can sign up to support them and sign up to give if you would like to do that. And I would love for us to go from here and sign up to support these amazing charities that are speaking out on behalf of the least, the last, and the lost. And I'm not saying there aren't other charities. There are amazing charities, even just within our city, that are local, not just international. But these are two that I'm commending to you. And so support others. Support those who can say the kind of things that we want to say, but we can't say it because we haven't got the ear of those who might listen. And then as you're looking at those, if you're over 18, there's something quite important happening next month. And on Tuesday is the deadline for you to register to vote. If you haven't yet registered to vote and you're over 18, please register to vote. Why am I saying that? Well, when we visited Hong Kong, we saw the riot police responding to the protesters. We saw a man with a camera, a reporter, that's the word I was looking for, with his gas mask and his helmet and his camera, waiting for the riots to happen so that he could take the shot. We saw an astonishing amount of graffiti calling for democracy. Because those people who live in Hong Kong who have been used to democracy are facing a future where they may well lose it. And I don't want us as a church community to complain about what's going on in our world without having done something about it. Now, you may feel like your vote isn't that important, but just like your name on the Tear Fund petition is important, so your vote on the ballot paper is important. It's a sign of us trying to take responsibility for the country in which we live. Now, we're never going to tell you how you should vote. I've been in churches which did that in America. It didn't go well. We're not going to do that. I'm simply going to encourage you to vote. And I'm simply going to encourage you to read the manifestos if you can, to think seriously and pray, Lord, what is the best way that I can use this little tick that I've got? Not just for me, but for others. Not just for my good, but for the general good of this country that I get to call home. Winston Churchill had this amazing quote. Many forms of government have been tried and will be tried in this world of sin and woe. Do you get that? How to deal with brokenness? We just have to realize that we live in a world of sin and woe. No one pretends that democracy is perfect or all wise. Indeed, it has been said that democracy is the worst form of government, except for all those other forms that have been tried from time to time. Let's not take for granted the opportunity that we have to make our vote. So those are the big picture things, the things that we can do in terms of reform. But what can we do in our daily life? How might we respond to what it is that I've been speaking about tonight? Well, here's some suggestions. The first thing, help with Bags of Hope. Bags of Hope are a means of relief to people. They're a blessing to others. And if you've got some time between 7 o'clock and 9 o'clock in the morning over the next few weeks, or 4 o'clock and 6 o'clock in the afternoon, then please come and talk to me. And we'll sign you up to go and help at number one Spinning Fields, where literally hundreds of people walk past every day. And we're so grateful to Jacob for organizing that with the building where he works. Hundreds of people having the opportunity to be involved in gospel ministry, blessing others who have less than them. Join in with the Vulnerable Women team. Maybe you're a woman and you have Monday afternoons free. Well, Lizzie would love to hear from you. because their team is small right now, and it's an amazing little crack SAS team of people who are helping out those who are struggling in the sex industry. But the more people they have who are working on the team, the more people they're able to help. And maybe that is you. The third thing would be to become a TLG volunteer. I haven't got time to go into that very much, but it's a mentoring process that happens in our school, giving 1 hour to one child for 1 year. 1 hour every week to one child for 1 year. 1 hour's great, but not very good. So 1 hour every week for one child for 1 year. And the reports are that these kids are transformed through just having someone love them and be with them and have one-to-one support time with them. So maybe you could do that. And perhaps if you want to know more about it, Grace might be a good person to talk to, who's one of our TLG volunteers. She's looking cold in the scarf over there if you wonder who Grace is. Fourth thing, come and hear about Hong Kong on January the 26th. So as I said, Lizzie and I had loads of stories and felt very challenged and very inspired. And we thought we'd create some space where we can tell a few more of those stories and talk about what God might be speaking to us about in terms of what can we do here and helping the most challenged and most deprived. So that's a Sunday afternoon, January the 26th. We figured we'd not do it around Christmas, so we'll leave it until the new year. But we'd love for you to come and hear more about that. And then finally, we've already said it, support Tear Fund or IJM or another charity that is working at that high level of reform. So why don't we take a moment to pray?